Tomorrow I shall move that you are ab harmo, and in the event of this not working, I—"
"Smelling of violets," said William, who had been translating in his head, "and pockets full of fish."
"Based on a case some 600 years ago, when the defendant successfully pleaded that, although he had indeed pushed the victim into a lake, the man came out with his pockets full of fish to his net benefit," said Mr. Slant crisply. "In any case, I shall argue that, if withholding information from the watch is a crime, every person in the city is guilty."
"Mr. Slant, I do not wish to have to say how and where I got my information," said William. "If I have to, I shall have to reveal all of it." The light from the distant lamp over the watch-house door, behind its blue glass, illuminated the lawyer's face. He looked ill.
"You really believe these two men had accomplices?"
he said. "I'm sure of it," said William. "I'd say it's a matter of record." At that point, he almost felt sorry for the lawyer, but only almost.
"That might not be in the public interest," said Mr. Slant slowly. "This ought to be a time for reconciliation."
"Absolutely. So I'm sure you will see to it that I don't have to pour all those words into Commander Vimes's ear."
"Strangely enough, there was a precedent in 1497 when a cat successfully—"
"Good. And you will have one of your special quiet words with the Engravers Guild? You are good at quiet words."
"Well, of course, I will do my best. The bill, however—"
"Won't exist," said William. Only then did Mr. Slant's parchment features really crease up in pain.
"Pro bono publico?"
he croaked. "Oh, yes. You will certainly be working for the public good," said William. "And what is good for the public, of course, is good for you. Isn't that nice?"
"On the other hand," said Mr. Slant, "perhaps it would be in the interests of everyone to put this sorry affair behind us, and I will be, happy to donate my services."
"Thank you. Mr. Scrope is now the patrician?"
"Yes."
"By the vote of the guilds?"
"Yes, of course."
"The unanimous vote?"
"I don't have to tell—"
William raised a finger. "Ah," he said. Mr. Slant squirmed.
"The beggars and the seamstresses voted to adjourn," he said. "So did the launderers and the Guild of Exotic Dancers."
"So that would be Queen Molly, Mrs. Palm, Mrs. Manger, and Miss Dixie Voom," said William. "What an interesting life Lord Vetinhardy must have led."
"No comment."
"And would you say Mr. Scrope is looking forward to getting to grips with the manifold problems of running the city?" Mr. Slant considered this one.
"I think that may be the case,"
he conceded. "Not least of which is the fact that Lord Vetinhardy is in fact completely innocent, and that therefore there is a very large question mark over the appointment. Would you advise that he takes up his duties with several spare pairs of underpants?" "You don't have to answer that last one."
"It is not my job to instruct the Assembly of Guilds to reverse a legitimate decision, even if it turns out to have been based on erroneous information, nor is it my responsibility to advise Mr. Scrope on his choice of undergarments."
"See you tomorrow, Mr. Slant," said William. William barely had time to undress and lie down before it was time to get up again. He washed as best he could, changed his shirt, and went cautiously down to breakfast. He was, in fact, the first at the table. There was the usual stolid silence as the other guests gathered. Most of Mrs. Arcanum's boarders didn't bother to talk unless they had something to say. But when Mr. MacLeod sat down, he pulled out a copy of the Times from his pocket.
"Couldn't get the paper," said Mr. MacLeod, shaking it open, "so I got the other..."